Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Get down.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Hour number two, John Dickinson, Kyle Madsen, and you at 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. We are with you until 2 o'clock here today on 95.7 The Game. Happy Sunday, everybody. Sports are coming back. The games are on the schedule in the NBA. We know Major League Baseball is going to announce their schedule at some point here before the holiday weekend. We're just kind of throwing out there, you know, what the return is going to look like in terms of watchability, fan interest, excitement level. And, Kyle, I laid it out. Here's my concern for the NBA. Okay. And because when you look at it on the surface, when you look at the schedule, and I've got it here in front of me, when you look at Pelicans, Jazz, on TNT, the first game, Lakers, Clippers, TNT, the first game, the first day, you know, full day of games where they've got six games that second day, Friday, the three games that are nationally televised that day, Memphis and Portland, Boston, Milwaukee, Houston, Dallas. There's four games out of five on the Saturday, August the 1st, that are nationally televised on ESPN. This thing is laid out as a dream for watchability and an NBA fan, right? It's amazing.
Yes.
Here's the thing. I'm worried after those first 3 days about the good teams becoming unwatchable. Because
I think they're coasting.
None of the top seven in the Western Conference or the top six in the Eastern Conference are going to treat any of the seeding games like anything other than a glorified training camp and preseason. And while there will be, I think, an initial ramp up and excitement, and, you know, Miami and Denver and the Clippers and Pelicans and the Lakers and Raptors that first weekend, there are a lot of great games on the slate. I think after you get through those first three games or so, and the euphoria of basketball is back and it all wears off, I'm worried that for those next 2 weeks, you're going to get 13 of the 22 teams basically treating it like none of it matters, with load management schedules and ramp ups, and also treating games against the group of teams that's actually fighting for something like those games don't matter, which is going to ultimately have an impact on who advances and gets those last couple of spots. The NBA has to be better than that if this thing is going to work. And I think that's been the biggest problem that the NBA has had generally over the course of the last couple of years, and why ratings are down. To me, NBA ratings are down because there are too many big games that just don't live up to it. Now, Kyle, we're going to be in a position where, like I said, it's almost like having 16 NFL Sundays with all of these games that the masses can watch back to back to back to back to back. These good teams have to act like they care, or I think the viewers aren't going to be there, to be perfectly honest.
I think that's right. I don't necessarily disagree with the premise there. However, these eight games, like typically a training camp or a preseason, is a tune-up for this long slog of a regular season. And the good teams, your Lakers, your Clippers, your Bucks, your Raptors, treat the regular season as effectively gearing up for the playoffs. Well, they've had 106 days off. We're at now 106.
Yeah, I keep updating it, but then I keep updating it every day, but I don't look at it like I used to.
It's somewhere between
it's more
100
than that. It's actually more than that. It's about 100 and it's almost 110 now.
It's like 109, I think.
We'll call it 110. So we're at day 110 without basketball. I think because these guys' schedules have been so thrown off that these eight games are going to be this like truncated hardcore tune-up for the playoffs, which actually do matter. And so I see what you're saying, where you have the Lakers resting LeBron and Anthony Davis, and they're just, if they are on the floor, they're coasting, and it's not super watchable. I don't think that that's going to be the case, because these guys need to get into playing shape, get reacclimated with each other, make sure everybody's on the same page, because they have 2 weeks to get ready to play at the highest level in the NBA playoffs. So I understand the concern a little bit, because we have such a long track record of that happening, but I think this eight-game regular season is going to be more valuable than anything we've kind of seen in the regular season over the last however many years.
I hope you're right, but here's the other part of it. Like, seeding doesn't even matter. Like, typically, yeah, seeding would matter. You know, you want to get home court advantage. And sure, there may be an element of you want to face this team or not face right. another team. I mean, that does subtly happen in the league from time to time. But, you know, getting the 5 seed versus the 4 doesn't matter. Getting the 3 seed versus the 6 doesn't matter, because all of these games are going to be, right. you know, it played in Orlando. They're all going to be neutral site games when it's all said and done. I do think there's an opportunity, and the one thing I will say, when it's all said and done, as far as the 16 days of the regular season, I want to make sure I got that right. 16 days of the seeding games in the regular season, before the possible play-in tournament, before the first round of the playoffs. I do think there's an opportunity for I think the group of teams that's going to have to save that those 2 weeks is going to be the Memphis, Pelicans, Blazers, Kings group. I actually throw San Antonio out, because I think San Antonio is going to care for about 2 games, and then they're not going to care.
Yeah.
And you might as well put them in the Phoenix, Washington category, although they do have games against teams that are in it, just like they are. I think we're going to look back, though, and there's going to be, and I think the league is clearly hoping it's the Pelicans, but I think that group of teams and having their games specifically be competitive when they play head-to-head, I think that's going to be the thing that is almost going to have to carry the day, because a lot of the other games that people are really, really, really going to be interested in are going to be duds. Like, I really do think we're going to get to a point where LeBron's playing the first couple, and then he's taking the third one off, and then Kawhi isn't going to play their back-to-back, because everybody's got one back-to-back, and probably take 2 other ones off, and which ones are they going to be, and is it going to be, you know, the games that they play other teams that are in it or not? Like, I really feel like, you know, the NBA has been so much like that now for so long that I feel like they have to prove me wrong, yeah, that it's not going to be like that. Because on paper, Kyle, this should be awesome.
Yeah.
Assuming that they can do it safely and avoid positive coronavirus tests. It should be awesome. But I don't know. I have a feeling Like the initial excitement for me waned a little bit because I started to think, well, the teams that you really want to watch for 2 weeks are probably going to be the teams that don't take this as seriously, just in terms of the ramp up and how they play it out.
Yeah, it certainly wouldn't surprise me. I'm going to have a little more faith that these NBA players are going to come back and really put the pedal to the metal for 8 games because they want to make sure that they're 100% tip-top ready to go for the playoffs after 3+ months off. On the other hand, as a viewer, I'm never taking sports for granted ever again after this. And so even if it is Lakers, Clippers playing in a game, and Kawhi's sitting out, and LeBron's sitting out, and Anthony Davis is sitting out, and Paul George is sitting out, I'm going to watch. Because we've seen how quickly it can just go away. So that's something that I've been saying through this whole thing. Whenever sports does get back, I'm never going to complain about it again. And I say that now, but I'm sure I'll be back to it at some point. But going in, I like to think that I won't complain that there's real-life sports on my TV for any reason. Because we've gone so long without it. I don't have to watch a 1986 World Series game.
Well, I'm with you there. I mean, I'm with you there. But you know how this is going to play out,
yes.
Right? Like,
yes.
We're all excited about it. Yes. And the very first 5 minutes of the Utah Pelicans game is going to look a little awkward. And everybody on Twitter, which is not representative of the real world, by the way, but everybody on Twitter is going to crush it. And then by the end of the night, when Kawhi and LeBron are going at it in the fourth quarter of a close game, everybody on Twitter is going to be acting like it's the greatest, you know, game that they've ever seen in the history of professional sports.
Yeah, there's going to be those ebbs and flows for sure. It's going to take some audacity to complain about there being sports back on TV, though.
We complained about the NFL draft 5 minutes in.
I know it.
I mean, I didn't, but again. It was there.
I just hope with
make
games.
Make the picks. Make the picks. Les Goodell. We want the picks. Well,
I will never step away from saying Les Goodell. I will say that forever. But I'm hoping that with actual games, it's different. I think once the initial shock of, and it may even take 2 or 3 days, the initial shock of watching a game without fans, once that's gone, I think it'll be back to complaining about officials and complaining about the broadcast or whichever, you know, rotations and whatever people complain about when they watch the NBA. I think it'll get back to that once the kind of novelty of the whole situation wears off. And I don't think it's going to take that long. I'm excited. I'm really actively excited for Thursday, July 30th, assuming everything stays on track, because that first game is going to tip off right about the time I get home. And I'm so excited to have a sport that I don't know the outcome of on my TV.
Yeah, and it looks like, you know, just as far as the schedule goes, I mean, there are going to be a lot of days where there's games either starting at 10 a.m. out here or 11 or 11:30, somewhere in that range. I think there's even one day on a Sunday where there's going to be a game as early as 9:30 in the morning. Because the games are going to be on the East Coast, it looks like 6 o'clock. The NBA went with their latest possible NBA Finals start time, which is 9 Eastern, for their latest games that are on the schedule. So 6 o'clock out here looks like it's about the limit. But on some days, there could be games from 10:30 in the morning all the way as late. And actually, I'm looking at Sunday the 9th of August. You could have games from 9:30 in the morning all the way till about 8:30 at night out here.
Gosh, I can't wait. It's like the NCAA tournament. It's like the first round of the NCAA tournament, but with NBA players. And in July, or August, I mean.
they're going to get the league pass money back too, because that day only, it looks like there's eight games that day. No, seven games that day, but only three of them are nationally televised. So if you're buying league pass, you're buying league pass, it looks like, for that day.
I want to make a claim. I want to make a claim right now. That San Antonio New Orleans game on ABC at noon Sunday, August 9th is going to be a snooze fest. I'm already complaining about it.
Yeah. They need some flexibility on that one. They need to be able to sub that game, and maybe they will. Maybe they will be able to.
Yeah, that's the other thing is, I don't know how, like, their schedule, everybody's playing in the same spot. It's not like all of a sudden a different team has to travel. So if Orlando-Boston is the huge game that day, why wouldn't they just slide them up to noon?
I'm going to guess they do have the ability to do that. And the one thing that they also did was the final two games, or the final 2 days, they went full NBA, or they went full MLB NFL mode, where the two game, all of the games on the last 2 days, so basically everybody's last game, are the times are to be determined. So the games that are most important are going to be played, you know, in the primetime slots, and right, the games that won't affect anything will be played, you know, very early on in the day. You know, the consolation games. Think back to your high school tournament where, you know, if you were in a 16-team tournament and you were in the 15-16 game on the last day of the tournament at 10 in the morning when the championship game was at 9 o'clock at night. That's how this is going to roll.
Who do you think, and if you don't want to get into this now, that's fine, who do you think gets the 8 seed in the West? Or do you think we get a play-in game in the West?
Oh, I think we will definitely. I think Memphis is up against it just because they still have a difficult schedule, a very difficult schedule. They are going to have to win their games. It's interesting how it worked out for them. They have the cushion, 3.5 on everybody else. Their first three games are all against teams in the mix: Portland, San Antonio, and the Pelicans. Their first three, right out of the chute. If they can win two of those games, I think they're going to be fine as far as being in the play-in. If they don't, I mean, their games after that are Utah, OKC, Toronto, Boston, Milwaukee. Like, you could make a case that if they go 1-2 in the first three, they might go 1-7.
Yeah, and that's a brutal schedule.
Yeah, and they had a brutal schedule. The where they got hurt, and again, this is just the nature of doing business with the way that they did it, is they had the fewest remaining games against, you know, bad teams, basically teams that weren't even good enough to come.
Yeah.
So, but they did still have a couple of them, but now those games go away. So you take the team that had the toughest schedule and you take away their easiest games in large respect. So the easy games they did have, the quote unquote easy games they did have, you take them away. Now their schedule in some ways gets tougher. So I do think there's a path for them to keep it, but the path for them to keep it is to win two of those first three games against the teams that are the closest to them.
Right.
The Pelicans are the team that got the greatest benefit of the schedule, but they play, you know, they play Memphis, they play the Kings twice in this, and they also play San Antonio. So half of their games are going to be against other teams in the group. I mean, I think a big part of this is going to be how the teams in the group do against each other when they play each other. Portland, likewise, Portland has the advantage of, you know, they have the advantage of they played two more games, so they basically have a built-in tiebreaker over the rest of the teams in that group. But they're going to have to win. I feel like the NBA wants it to be the Pelicans. I wouldn't bet against Portland, and my wild card team is Sacramento. But I do think we will see a play-in. I do think we'll see a play-in. Like, Sacramento to me is the one team where, you know, their first two games are against the Spurs and the Magic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they win those two games, I actually think they are the team that most likely could take advantage of teams that coast.
Yeah,
in some of their other games, because I think they're gonna take it extremely seriously. And if you watch the Kings play a lot of their big wins come solely because they are really amped up to play against a team that isn't amped up to play against them.
Right.
And like they take advantage of that a lot. So I think this format actually could benefit them in that way. But again, they're still going to have to beat the Spurs and the Pelicans when they play those two teams head to head. And oh, by the way, you know, even games against Brooklyn and Orlando, they didn't win head to head when they played those teams earlier in the year. So it's not like any of it's a lock.
Right.
But I actually think if it's a wild card team, it would be Sacramento. If I had to bet, I would say it's Portland or the Pelicans that wind up taking it. But I think the NBA is, you know, as much as I'm concerned, Kyle, for the really good teams coasting and making it somewhat uninteresting, you know, the 2 weeks in the bubble, I actually think that that group of teams that we're talking about now, I think Memphis, Portland, the Pelicans, the Kings, I think that group of teams specifically, those teams, and I'm going to say one of them, and I don't even know which one it'll be, one of those teams is going to steal the show and become the darling. Because
nobody wants to face them.
It's going to be, it's just going to be, and well, it won't even matter. It won't even matter what they can do once they get in the actual playoff. Like that, I'm not saying that by any stretch. That will not matter at all.
But
none of these teams is going to beat the Lakers, but it's going to be kind of like the NCAA tournament where as it plays out, I think one of those teams that's fighting for the eight spot or Memphis fighting to keep their eight spot, I think one of those teams is going to be, is going to become the darling. And I think that group as a whole, I'm going to go as far as to say that group of teams is going to determine the watchability of the 2 weeks of seeding games.
Okay. I can see that. Where one of the teams just goes on a run and New Orleans goes 7-1, you mean?
Or their games are just super competitive head-to-head.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I can
see that,
for
sure. Talk about. You know, because we're going to talk about all the, you know, initially we're going to go into this talking about the headliners. We're going to talk about LeBron. We're going to talk about Kawhi. We're going to talk about Giannis. Like, that's how we're going to go into it, and that's how we should go into it. We're going to talk about Luka. We're going to talk about all these good teams and what it means. That's going to be how we all focus on this thing coming in. But I think by the start of the second week, it's going to be more about the teams that are fighting for spots, and it's going to have a little bit of that college basketball feel where you're going to have certain games going on every night that are just of supreme importance to decide whether or not we get, you know, the play-in series or not. And yeah, I think one of those teams is going to go on some kind of a run where they basically become the darling of the whole 2 weeks.
I could see that. I don't think it's going to be Washington.
No.
I think
it's
Orlando's
not Washington,
safe in that
and it's not Phoenix. It's not Washington, and it's not Phoenix. Washington and Phoenix, again, forget about them. Neither one of those two teams should even be there.
I'm envisioning I'm envisioning a scenario where Damian Lillard and the Blazers just get scorching hot, and they play a bunch of super entertaining, awesome games, and Dame averages 45 for those eight games.
Could happen.
That's what I'm envisioning.
They were on fumes. Like, that's the other, like, they were on absolute fumes when everything stopped, and Lillard was playing on a groin that he had just missed six games, and he was coming back, and he wasn't really 100%, it didn't look like, and McCollum was kind of out of whack, and they just were awful on defense, and they were waiting for Nurkic and Collins to come back, but they were still weeks away. Now they're going to have, all of those issues are corrected, in theory, rested. You know, I think they were really tired from, you know, the long run that they had last year. So all of those things are corrected. I actually think Ariza not going hurts them because they just don't have wings. And they really traded for him because they needed him. And so not having him hurts them in terms of not having wings. But, yeah, they still have Dame. I think they'll be fun to watch. I think the Pelicans potentially could be that team. You know, they, you know, getting Zion ready to go. Could be big.
I'm interested to see if there's already a there's already people saying that the NBA wants New Orleans in the playoffs, and that's why they took this many teams and all that. I'm interested to see. Go ahead.
Yeah, No, I mean, I think they did. I'm sorry. I'll let you finish. But I think we, I mean, I think they, you know, they made, I think they wanted to give them a shot. But I also think, I don't know. They also picked the schedule among games that were remaining, too. So it's not like they had the easiest schedule, just like Memphis had the toughest schedule, right? Like, they had the easiest schedule before. They still have the easiest schedule. Memphis had the toughest schedule before. They still have the toughest schedule. All that being said, I do think the NBA wants the Pelicans in.
I'm interested to see if that plays out during games, if there's, you know, a call or two here that people start developing conspiracies on. That's what I was getting
to. That's never happened in the NBA.
You're right. Never once.
Come on. That's never happened. The NBA would never do that. All right, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. The NBA is not the only sport coming back. We'll get into a baseball conversation straight ahead. What makes the Giants season successful? And we'll also talk a little A's on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson and Kyle Madsen here on a Sunday, 888-957-9570, live and local on the weekend here on 95.7 The Game as we get back to some semblance of normal. Kyle, one of the projects that I had for myself as we shift gears here and talk a little baseball prior to the show was I needed to clean out some DVR space. Because I obsessively record old games, mainly.
Okay.
So I was actually down to 3% this morning on the DVR, and which I believe is still, I think that's still for me 15 hours, but my math may be wrong on that. But anyway, regardless, I had a DVR at 97% of capacity. And the reason for this is because I've been obsessively for the last 3 months recording old games that I'm interested in watching when they come on, you know, the major networks. Spent a good portion, we'll get into this a little bit later on, spent a good portion of this week rewatching the 89 World Series between the Giants and the A's, which was fun to revisit because I don't know that I've watched any of those games start to finish since they happened when I was 8 years old. So it was kind of cool to do that. Did you check those out this week, by the way?
I did not. I have a couple different jobs that I do when I get home. So by the time I sit down to watch TV, it's a quick show with my girlfriend and then I go to bed.
All right. And that's fine. It's disciplined. It's a solid approach.
Yeah, I've watched...
no judgment.
I've watched a ton of like content about the 89 World Series. I've never watched the four games like start to finish, though. And keeping in mind, I was not born yet when those games happened.
Sure. Well, so. and that to me would be all the more reason. And I know you as an A's fan. I mean, that was, you know, the reason I actually put it on there. One of the reasons was, you know, I thought, you know, hey, you know, an A's fan that was not born yet at that particular point in time. I mean, that, you know, that was a big deal.
What's actually weird about the 88, 89, and 90 A's is I've probably consumed more more game action from 88. And 90 than I have from 89.
Interesting.
And I can't explain why.
That's interesting.
I might just stumble on them or what, but yeah, I probably should have gone out of my way to watch the 89 games on NBC today or this week. That's my bad.
I think The 88 World Series where Gibson hits the home run, I mean, that game's on a lot.
Right.
I could see where you would get that game. I know a couple of weeks ago, and I had never seen these games, but a couple of weeks ago, I think it was kind of a MLB Network ode to the Dodgers or something, ode to Oral Hershiser or They were doing something. So they actually had like game four and game five of the 88 World Series was on, which was kind of cool. Just because I hadn't seen those games. You know, it was just kind of cool because they were, you know, those games were played at the Coliseum. So it was cool to see the, you know, the Coliseum, and Vin right. Scully called that series, because it was on in NBC at that particular point in time. So it was kind of fun to watch that. But anyway, I'm picking things that I got to delete. I've got old NBA games. I've got some NFL games. I'm going through. I was able to get it from 3% to about, I don't know, 15% before the show. And one of the games that I had recorded was actually, I just started playing it, and then I never turned it off right before we started the show here. And it's game one of the 2012 World Series. And so this was when the Giants with Barry Zito beat Justin Verlander and Pablo Sandoval hit three home runs.
Right.
So that game's just kind of been on in the background here as we've been doing the show.
Oh, how's that going?
Right as we were, it's 6-1 Giants in the seventh.
I think they've got this one wrapped up.
Yeah. And Tim Lincecum's on in relief of Barry Zito. In game one. The reason I brought that up, and we're going to get into some Giants conversation as it pertains to 2020, because I was floored by, I mean, something that I knew, but it hadn't been put strictly in this context, like right in front of me in a while, is as we were coming back from the break, they were doing the game two promo read. You know, so it was like, all right, game two tomorrow night. It's Doug Fister and Madison Bumgarner. And Madison Bumgarner at that point in 2012 was 0-2 in the postseason with an 11.25 ERA.
I've always said Madison Bumgarner is an all-time choke artist, JD. I'm joking.
and honestly, I mean, those are the only two bad postseason games I think he's ever had.
He figured it out.
and the irony, and I know Giants fans know this. I know you're a big baseball, you know, historian. Honestly, even as young as you are, I know you love the game a lot.
Yes.
The irony in 2012, among a lot of the ironies for the Giants in winning that World Series, was Barry Zito entered the rotation in the league championship series for an ineffective Madison Bumgarner. So like Barry Zito, when he started game five in St. Louis, when the Giants were down 3-1, he started because Madison Bumgarner got shelled in game one and had two really bad games in the postseason to that point, to where he had a mechanical issue and the Giants were kind of worried if he was tired or something. But Madison freaking Bumgarner, in what was an elimination game for the Giants in 2012, got pulled from a scheduled start for Barry Zito.
Wild. It's so
weird.
And then
Barry Zito wins that game and wins game one against Verlander. And then Bumgarner gets reinserted in game two and went seven shutout innings.
Right. And went on to be one of the greatest World Series pitchers.
And I don't think allowed a World Series run. I think allowed one run in the World Series in like 25 innings or something, or 30 innings from that point on.
It's unbelievable, dude. Like, it was unbelievable when it was happening, but it's even more so like now that we're getting further and further removed from it. He's amazing.
And then here's Tim Lincecum on in basically mop-up duty in
another
the
weird
inning
thing
of game one. Yeah. No, no doubt.
There's nothing. I mean, there's nothing. And I don't say this because I'm trying to take anything away from that Giants run. It was remarkable. And I think, like I said, as we get further removed from it, I think people are going to look at baseball and go, what the heck happened here? And that's part of what made it so fun. But looking back at just how improbable all those World Series were, and just the players that stepped up and the way they were winning games, it was strange at the time and kind of inexplicable at the time. And it's just gotten more so as the years have passed, at least for me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And as we relate it back to the 2020 Giants, a lot of those players are still around.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I'm looking at look, everybody's excited to have games back, to have sports back. That's been kind of the theme of the show to this point. But as I look toward, and I'm going to be perfectly honest, I had not, much like I had not done a deep dive on the NBA schedule, although there were a few things that I was able to point out in the last segment as far as the seeding games and the return, I had not done a deep dive on what the Giants roster was going to look like, if baseball came back, because it just always kind of felt like it wasn't going to happen. So, or I'll get to that when it actually does happen. So the last couple of days have really been the first that I've kind of gotten back into it. But you got to take yourself back to like where we were almost when things stopped on March 11th, right? It like we were still 2 weeks away from the baseball season beginning, but you know, the Warriors were in the midst of a season and free agency in the NFL was about to happen. It's like you're not really thinking about, you're thinking, all right, the Giants are going to be not very good. And it's a transition year, and the A's have a shot to be really, really, really good, like they've been the last 2 years, maybe even a little better. Mm-hmm. And it's a great opportunity for them. And that's kind of where you left it, right? Like that's that phatic understanding of where they stand. In reacclimating myself to the Giants over the last few days, I mean, my God, Kyle, it's still Buster Posey's going to play catcher. Brandon Belt's going to be at first.
Sure
Brandon
is.
Crawford's going to play short.
Boy, is
Evan
it.
Longoria is going to play third. Joey Bart may not be among the active players on July 23rd, although in the mix to play at some point. And then you've got Mauricio Dubon, who is the lone young position player with a ceiling that actually was a prospect that's even going to be in their starting nine, and an outfield of journeymen and retreads and, you know, guys that look like their career was over, Mike Yastrzemski that made good, Dickerson and Hunter Pence.
It was very much, at least how Bonte, Steine, and Guru would talk about it, was it's just to see what happens. They're probably not going to be very good, but maybe Dubon puts together a nice run, and now it's okay, when does Joey Bart come up? That's one of the big questions. And who gets traded at the deadline? Who plays well enough to build enough trade value to move him at the deadline? It was just a lot of that. And I think it's still some of that, but in a 60 game season with the experience the Giants have with the guys you mentioned, Posey and Belt and Hunter Pence, who now with the universal DH can DH, where he played really well for the Rangers last year. Now all of a sudden it's like, huh, maybe this team wins 34, 35 games and finds themselves in a postseason scenario.
That you guys actually had that conversation?
No. No,
okay.
Not no.
That, okay.
No, that's just that's just because. So, I'm looking at that. That's me personally saying that now.
Okay. Okay.
I'm looking at it as even bad teams can have a 60 game stretch where it's like, oh, they played around 500. They're a couple games under. I'm just saying the Giants, if things kind of go their way all of a sudden. Now, things going their way doesn't mean they win 70 games. Things going their way means, hey, maybe they luck into finding themselves in the playoff hunt in a truncated season. Or maybe they win 20 games, which is on the table.
Well, again, I mean, if you just look at, hey, you're going to play 60, and what would be your baseline of, you know, if you lose 2 out of 3,
mm-hmm.
the whole year. You know, if you lose 2 out of 3 the whole year, you're 20 and 40.
Right.
I don't think they'll necessarily be that bad, but I think they'll be pretty close to that. Like, I mean, I feel like, you know, I know their over under was 25.5, I believe. I mean, I think that's about right. Like, I don't think the season is going to be long enough to where they, unless they're just one of a couple of teams that absolutely gets off to a disastrous start. And I do think there will be a couple of teams that do,
mm-hmm.
but assuming they are not one of those teams, I think they are likely destined to be about a 25-win team. I really do. It might be 23, it might be 24, it might be 27, you know, but, you know, a team that's, you know, not mathematically out of it, but also not really ever in it.
Sure.
Go ahead.
I wasn't trying to say that I think the Giants are going to win 35 games, but with going into the 162 game full season, I think there were playoffs were not even a thought, and it was just get as many innings for the young guys as possible and start to see what the foundation is for the next decade of Giants baseball. Whereas now with these 60 games, I don't think it's exclusive to the Giants. I think kind of every team's looking at it like, if we can fall into a good 60-game stretch, we're in the mix. And just with the, like I said, the experience the Giants have and some of the guys they have with Buster Posey, maybe Posey's done being a productive player. But I don't know. I'm with you that if I'm putting money on it, that 25 and a half.
I mean, I think they're like, it, you just look at, you. If you said, JD, give me a record, what do you think the Giants' record's going to be? The first number that pops into my mind is 25-35.
Yeah.
And that was before I knew what their over under was.
Yeah. And I think that's probably about right. But my whole point here is with a 60 game season, I think a lot of the narratives that existed with the full season change a little bit. Just for every team, because it's 60 games and who the heck knows in baseball with the 60 game season.
Well, and I believe the Giants, and I may be off on this, and you might have the exact number, but I want to say their best 60 game stretch last year was 37-23.
I don't have the exact number in front of me, but they were really good in July.
Yeah, 19-6. So that right there is 13 over. So if you're 13 over and then for a stretch either before or after they were right around 500, that would obviously carry, you know, right around that 36 or 37, you know, win mark out of 60. I think that was also with, you know, people don't say this. It was said a little bit, and I think it, you know, some people kind of rolled their eyes because I think it was, they, you know, the belief is, well, that's just heaping platitudes on somebody that's already had platitudes heaped upon him. But I really do believe, and this is like, Bruce Bochy did a really good job last year. I'm not saying Bruce Bochy was like, it was one of the greatest years he's ever had, but the fact that that team last year was not a complete and utter embarrassment,
all things considered,
is a credit to Bruce Bochy's managing ability. And when you have a team that does as well as the Giants did in one run games, like, and you know this, like, teams that are as bad as the Giants were last year don't win one run game. Like, that's usually the reason teams are bad, is because they don't win one run games at a high rate. The Giants were one of the best, if not the best team in Major League Baseball in one run games, and they were still bad, which tells me that Bruce Bochy did a hell of a job. And yeah, that team should have been a lot worse.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's probably right. And that's kind of one of the other things here is the Gabe Kapler factor has kind of...
You downgraded at manager, too.
Yeah. And I like I said, if I'm betting on it, I'm not betting that the Giants make the playoffs. I probably go under 25.5. But everything's on the table with 60 games, except for maybe like the Orioles and the Tigers. But to me, it's all on the table. It's all out there. And maybe they win 15, but.
Yeah, I mean, that would be, I mean, I, you know, probably not.
The optimism comes from the season, not something different with the Giants.
Here's the thing that I think people don't realize about baseball is 25-35 is mediocre, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's not, mm-hmm, you're not good. That's mediocre. That's a team that's not very good.
Right.
But 25-35, when you look at it, you just kind of like, it doesn't make you say to yourself, oh my God, that's a God awful baseball team. Right.
Yeah.
It's definitely not, it's a bad team. here's where I'm going with it, though. 25 and 35 over 162 games is 67 and 95.
Oof.
So the reality is, if you're 25 and 35, you really are, you're lucky that you didn't have to play 162 because you were probably headed for 67 to 70 wins to begin with. And I actually think that's one area where, the Giants actually make out in this thing is because unless they are just wretchedly bad, like, and just unless they're the team that starts, you know, 5-15,
sure,
you know, something like that, and it just continues to careen from there. Unless they're one of those teams that's among the worst two or three, they're actually going to be in that 25-35 range. I think people are going to rethink that they actually kind of held their own, when the reality is if they had been that team over 162, it would look very, 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 very ugly by the end of September.
How are you defining success for the Giants this year?
I have an answer for you.
We're going to get to it after the break?
We'll get to it coming up at the top of the hour.
I
have defined success for the San Francisco Giants in 2020. And I want to get your take on it, though, as well. 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. We've got some Draymond Green stuff to get into coming up later. A lot of Warriors conversation. We haven't talked much Warriors the last couple of weeks. And there's also, for the back half of the show, it's the story that I don't want to see in the NFL pertaining to the Niners. I really don't want to see it, but it's something that's going to linger beneath the surface, I think, all year long. All of those things are coming up in the back half of the show, but how do the Giants have a successful season? I'm going to tell you that coming up next. John Dickinson, Kyle Madsen, we're halfway through here on a Sunday at 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.